right. Redistricting, special master, the plan, the whole thing. We got to try to figure this out, right? As far as the upcoming primaries locally here, June 28th, August 23rd, general election, of course, on November the 8th. We'll do that. Jeff Geo, Millennial Strategies, back with us. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Jay. It is great to be with you.
Always great having you. Let's get into, before we get into the restructuring and everything else that has taken place, let's get into some races last night. You had a key primary,
yeah.
Pennsylvania, North Carolina, Kentucky, Idaho. Who's the other one? Oh, Oregon. That's right. Casting ballots yesterday. Nominees for the 2020 midterms. You got some high-profile Senate races, Jeff. We got some swing states here, Pennsylvania, North Carolina. Lots of attention, rightfully so, with control of the 50-50 chamber on the line. Come November, woke up to see Mehmet Oz, Dr. Oz, with a 2,600-vote lead over Dave McCormick. Now, of course, Oz backed by the former President Donald Trump, 95% of the vote in. What was your take out of this? You know, Kathy Barnett was supposed to be the rising star and only got, 24.8% of the vote there. So interesting goings on in PA these days, last night.
Well, I think nationally we saw that the Trump endorsement for Republicans means a couple of different things. I mean, it does motivate a certain portion of the Republican constituency, but also it seems to turn off another portion of it. And like, you know, the moderate Republicans in these primaries did surprisingly well. The best thing for Pennsylvania Democrats, and Pennsylvania is, you know, an absolutely critical seat for the U.S. Senate. For those who don't know, Senator Toomey, the Republican from Pennsylvania, is retiring. So this is viewed as one of the best Democratic pickups, and most critical races in the country. Having a race that is going to be expensive, and is almost certainly going to go to a recount, certainly plays into the Democrats' hands here, as Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman was able to win his primary fairly easily over Congressman Connor Lamb.
Yeah. Oz, it's funny, McCormick, you know, kind of, listen, 409,000 plus votes to 411 and change for Oz. I mean, what do you think of McCormick's steam here? As, a lot of people thought it was Barnett, the rising star, and, you know, Oz might have taken a step back, but here comes Dave McCormick. What do you think of his performance last night?
I think it was definitely impressive, and you've got to be favored to win at this point. You know, the other Trump phenomenon that we saw play out across all these states, North Carolina, Kentucky, Pennsylvania, especially, was that, you know, like the Trump endorsed candidate performed best on same day voters. These were voters who were for some reason or another not sophisticated enough to vote early or vote by mail. Pennsylvania has both features. You can vote early and you can vote by mail in Pennsylvania. And so when you go to a recount, those are the ballots that are going to get opened up. Some of those mail ballots that are still in process, some of your military ballots, absentee ballots, stuff like that. And the Trump endorsee has never, for reasons that we could probably spend an hour dissecting, have never done well in those mediums. And so, I think Dr. Oz, who, by the way, doesn't live in Pennsylvania anyway, is probably headed for a protracted, lengthy, and expensive path to defeat.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. And listen, there are tens of thousands, folks, of absentee ballots. But either way, if it's McCormick, if it's Oz, they're going to have to go against Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman, Jeff, who cruised to victory. And I mean cruised to victory in the Democratic primary, despite being hospitalized, by the way, after suffering a stroke a couple of days prior. And that will set up an interesting one as far as November is concerned. I mean, Fetterman and, purple state and whatnot here, that's an interesting situation.
You know, Fetterman is just like the anti-establishment Democrat. I mean, you know, this is a guy who's 6'10" with a long beard who has single-handedly bought the jean shorts, aka jorts, back into fashion in Pennsylvania. Really interesting guy, but you know, has really created a brand for himself. And then politics is all about branding. It's all about name ID. And Pennsylvania is a blue collar state. A lot of your working class, middle class, union guys have long supported him. And you know, I would think that early on, especially as the recount rages on between McCormick and Oz, that Fetterman's got to be favored here, so long as his health is able to hold up. And maybe eat a couple salads, you know, like commit to a Bowflex, do something, get your health in order, and get ready to serve in the U.S. Senate.
North Carolina, the other one, Ted Budd, with a winner there, going up against Beasley now. So, what was your take as far as the Tar Heel State?
I think the biggest take out of the Tar Heel State was not necessarily the results of the U.S. Senate primary, which pretty much went as expected, but the defeat of incumbent Congressman Madison Cawthorn was something that was really interesting to see. Ran against a guy whose website was like publicly unfindable, and yet the Trump endorsed 20 something congressman will find himself unemployed come January because of some very controversial things he said and did, and I think that you know, Democrats and who have had a rough week already, which I'm sure we're about to get to, you know, certainly were able to rejoice at that one.
Democrats are having a very rough time, especially waking up today. The average price for a gallon of gas, $4.57 on the national front, and no end in sight, which leads me to the congressional elections, a little more competitive, a little better odds now, Jeff, for Republicans under this new proposal that was unveiled a couple of days ago.
You know,
the court-appointed special master makes for about 15 Democrat-leaning districts in the state, 5 that lean now Republican. So the remaining 6, when you kind of decipher this, could be considered, toss-ups. Democrats holding a slight advantage of most of them, based on the voting patterns of a couple of years ago. But really, when you look at Republicans here, those maps mean better odds than a map approved early in the year by the Democrat-dominated state ledge that created, that whole, 22-4 split favoring the Dems. So, interesting the way this thing kind of turned out as far as that's concerned.
Well, yeah. So this situation is emblematic of why Democrats can't have nice things right now. An unbelievable turn of events. So, Democrats in New York took a look at Ohio, and they took a look at Florida, and they said, wow, look at the crazy, you know, like borderline racist partisan gerrymanders that the Republican legislatures and the Republican governors are going to do in those states that are similarly sized to New York. Let's do kind of the same thing, but in a Democratic way, meaning, and try to create a situation that enables the Democrats to have the best chance possible to hold on to the House come November. And the difference is that while in Ohio, their horrifically gerrymandered maps cruise through the courts, in Florida, a horrific gerrymander had to be altered ever so slightly to be less racist, and cruise through the courts. Here in New York, a bunch of Cuomo-appointed judges decided that our maps went too far. And the result was, due to a ruling from a judge in Steuben County. Jay, do you know where Steuben County is? I had to look it up. I don't honestly know.
Steuben County. I've heard of it.
I've heard of it. But we're both Suffolk County guys. We don't know where it is. But a judge in that place ruled our maps were unconstitutional, and that judge, thanks to the New York State Court of Appeals, was able to appoint a special master. That's a real thing. Some guy from Carnegie Mellon University to redraw New York's congressional and state senate maps. And you know, the generous outlook on the previous Democratic drawn maps was that New York could go as far as 24 Democratic seats and 2 Republican seats. And now we're staring down the barrel of perhaps looking at maybe 16 Democrats and 10 Republicans. It is a massive swing with massive national ramifications. And you know, no one is happier than what the special master has done, than one Kevin McCarthy, who I'm sure is, you know, looking at some new furniture to occupy the speaker's office in D.C.
Yeah, and you look locally here because, you know, you look at the state Senate districts, also were ordered redrawn. And you look at the island here, and the new maps allow for a white majority population in that third Senate district. After lines drawn in January created a district, you know, with a plurality Hispanic population. So the other big change, you have Senators Gorin and Matera now, and this is the most interesting part of it, would both reside, folks, in the second senatorial district. I mean, if you look at the ramifications, Jeff, that would set up a possible battle of incumbents in Mr. Matera's home district.
And by the way, that favors the statewide. The Gore and Matera matchup isn't the only one. It's just the closest one to us. But on the state Senate side, the special master, and who knows if this person has ever been to Long Island, you know, took a look at the political divisions, like the towns on Long Island, and was like, okay, how about we do it this way? We're going to put Smithtown and Huntington into one Senate district. We're going to give Babylon its own Senate district. We're going to give Islip its own Senate district, and we're going to whack Brookhaven in half and give the North Shore and send the North Shore into a district with the East End, and send the central and southern part of Brookhaven into its own district. And there you have it. Like, you know, it's almost beautiful in its simplicity, how the special master did it. And when you look at, obviously, you know, where Long Island has gone in the last two presidentials, you're looking at districts that largely favor Republicans. And there really is no consideration, in Suffolk County's map specifically, towards any sort of like Voting Rights Act or racial considerations or anything like that. You know, it's just, you know, Babylon's on its own, Islip's on its own, Smithtown and Huntington are together. The East End is lumped in with Stony Brook, and everything else in Brookhaven has its own district.
That's, I'll tell you, it's a little confusing, but you know, we'll get the gist of it. But so under the new map, let me see if I got this right. So the third congressional would be primarily an S County district, correct?
Almost entirely.
And you have a portion, you have a portion of Queens thrown in there. Yeah. Am I right with that?
Well, the point of congressional map making is you want to put like socioeconomically similar communities together, right? And like if you've ever been to Douglaston or Whitestone or those parts of Queens, they're pretty similar to Great Neck and Port Washington and stuff like that. Like it's hard to tell when you cross the city line. I think that's why those parts of Queens remained within the New York 3 map. But I'll tell you, you know, if I am John Kamen or Bob Zimmerman or Josh Lafazan or any of these folks running in the highly contested Democratic primary for that seat, you know, I went to bed one night, you know, running in a district that one ran up into Westchester, and two was Biden plus 15. You know, it was a safe Democratic seat in the general election, and I woke up in a district that, you know, now stops at the Throgs Neck Bridge, but is going to be a knife fight in a general. I mean, it is on paper about Biden plus 3, which makes it a pretty nice Republican pickup opportunity if they were able to furnish the right candidate.
you look at the third now, you got what, Josh Lapazan?
Yes.
Now, he'll continue to run, even though his residence, I do believe, is in District 2 under these proposed
maps. It's a few blocks outside. The special master drew the maps without, obviously, any consideration for where the incumbents lived. And there are folks statewide who are, you know, right now probably looking up Zillow, well, hopefully listening to me talk to you, at new residences, because, you know, like, the rule is that if you live outside the district, it's okay in a redistricting year. You just have to be a resident of that district by the time you run again 2 years from now if you happen to win. So there's plenty of folks throughout the state who are in that position where they're being forced to run in districts where they don't actually reside.
You look at, for instance, in Manhattan, I'm going to look at a Jerry Nadler, a Carolyn Maloney situation.
Oh, my Lord.
Jeff, what about that? I mean, that's really interesting.
Yes. The special master giveth and the special master taketh away. I mean, the fact that we now live in a world where we've created a congressional district. If all the listeners can picture the island of Manhattan, essentially all of Manhattan from 96th Street to 14th Street on both the east and west side, the whole county, the whole island. Which let's face it, is the island that most everybody knows, especially if you're a Long Islander who commutes in or comes in every now and again or whatever the case may be. That is one congressional district. The east and the west side, to my knowledge, have never been in the same district before in decades, but here we are. And that pits Jerry Nadler, who is the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, and Carolyn Maloney, the chairwoman of the House Oversight Committee, two incredibly powerful bodies in that chamber, are now forced into a primary together. I think they are like a combined 160 years old or something. And there are still other insurgents in that primary too. It's going to be insane. And then below that, below 14th Street, where you have, you know, the East Village, the West Village, Chinatown, Phi Dai, etc., there's now a district that has that part of Manhattan and spreads into Brooklyn, all the way into Borough Park, Brooklyn, your predominantly Jewish area, which currently has no incumbent. And so everyone is seeming, you know, who represents that area or has ever wanted to represent that area or thought they had no political career ever again is thinking about getting in that race. So if you believe the New York Post, that means that guys like Bill de Blasio, Scott Stringer, and Lord knows who else are thinking about jumping in this race. It is going to be fantastic political theater.
Yeah. And keep in mind, there's another one, folks. I mean, like I said, you got moving, you got musical chairs going on here. That's what's happening.
Of the highest order. And
right,
the important thing to understand, not to overcomplicate this, is that that the maps we saw on Monday are not necessarily the final maps. We are giving folks a generous 96 hours to email the special master and ask for their changes to the maps. And then Friday, by the close of business, allegedly, the maps have the power of law. They'll be final.
Yeah.
And so the special master, this guy from Carnegie Mellon University, will have unequivocal control over perhaps the fate of the House of Representatives.
And then you got a guy like Sean Patrick Maloney, another one of these guys, said he's out of Cold Spring. He'll switch from 18 to 17 in the district. Then you have the Ulster County Executive, Pat Ryan. And then you have the State Senator, James Skoufis, out of Cornwall, say they would run for the 18th. You know, it's like the old switcheroo here. You take a guy like Mark Molinaro, who's reading, who's the Dutchess County Executive, made a run for governor a couple of years ago. He's going to switch his candidacy from the 18th congressional to the 19th, which doesn't even include Dutchess, by the way. a little more favorable for a Republican here. So, you know, you kind of get a sense of where these candidates' mindsets are regarding affiliation, you know, and rather than residence, you know, it's well, really, Jay, really becoming quite apparent.
Jay, once again, and I'm sure this will probably appeal to a lot of your viewers, or listeners rather, this is the scenario in the Hudson Valley you've just described is another example of why Democrats can't have nice things. In the 19th specifically, the incumbent congressman is Carlos Delgado, who has been seen as a rising star in the party. After the fiasco with former Lieutenant Governor Brian Benjamin, the powers that be in the state Democratic Party decided that they should pluck a popular congressman running in a competitive district that the Democrats absolutely need to have any chance of maintaining a majority in the House. They're going to take that guy out of his seat and make him lieutenant governor of the state of New York, which, as you and I both know, is a job that, unless there is a prostitution / sexual harassment scandal, see the past 10 years, 15 years, is a pretty useless job. And by putting Delgado in that spot, you are risking that seat. And given the new maps, you're unequivocally risking that seat by removing Delgado from that seat. So that's point one as to why Democrats can't have nice things. Point two, Sean Patrick Maloney is the chair of the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. It is his job. It is a job that former Congressman Steve Israel once held. It is his job explicitly to defend vulnerable Democratic seats and maintain the Democratic majority. That's his job. And yet, he had a choice. Do I run in a competitive district in the Hudson Valley, which is New York 18, or do I decide to move a little bit south and run in a safe Democratic district, but while doing so, mount a challenge against an LGBT African-American member of Congress in Mondaire Jones? And I'm going to announce it on Twitter before I even call the sitting congressman to tell him I'm coming to town to challenge him. It was a trash move, and it is incredibly indicative of the problems facing the Democratic Party today.
Yeah, really is. But the beat goes on. We shall see as we get ready for some very interesting times coming up again, June 28th, August 23rd. Folks, remember those dates. As far as the primaries, you got debates now all set up as far as the gubernatorial runs. And then, of course, general election November the 8th. So there you go. One other thing before I let you go.
I'm ready.
In Suffolk County last night, regarding term limits, you and I have spoken about this before. But, you know, basically what you're looking at here, Jeff, is the fact of 12 years. And that's what it's coming into play here. As far as the vote to hold a public hearing to bar the county lawmakers from serving more than a total of 12 years in office. It's all in the effort to prevent them from running for new terms after taking a break, most notably last year, where you had the former legislator, Kate Browning, announcing her candidate for a fourth term representing, the third legislative. She served 12 years in office, third term ending 2017. So there you go. Your take.
Well, I mean, if you're going to do term limits, do term limits. Don't include some loophole that you can sit it out for a couple years and come back. New York City has this problem too, insofar as that folks can serve a term limited time of office and then chill in the private sector for a few years, then come back. If you're gonna do something in government, do it all the way. So if we're gonna do term limits, let's make it absolute. Let's keep it at 12 years. Don't allow folks to serve their time and then hang out in either the public or the private sector. Often it's some no-show appointee job, and then come back a few years later. And that's that on both sides of the aisle. I think we can appreciate that. You make it real. That your time in office is supposed to be an intentionally short, and you have to make the most of it.
No doubt. No question about it. You have that time period. Make a difference. Make the change. Make your legacy and move on. I mean, that's really what it's about. Listen, it's about having a fresh face, a fresh voice, and that's what's so needed in the world of politics. We get so tired of this stuff. And, you know, you look at individuals in Albany who just never leave, you know, and it becomes detrimental to the process. It really does.
The term in the business, Jay, is member head. When folks have been a member for too long and a disconnect begins to exist between them and the people who elected them in the first place. And they have such strong name recognition that it's very difficult for them to be defeated.
No question. Jeff Gill, Millennial Strategies. You will hear from him again as we approach with all the debates coming into play in the next couple of weeks. That should be very interesting as we climb towards June 28th in the primary, especially for the governor's race in the state of New York. Always a pleasure to have you, my friend. We'll talk.
Good to be with you, Jay. Have a great day.